and thanks very much, Julie. And some of you may know, because you were there, that I brought out a collection of poetry there lately, Cutting Out of Which. It's all based on cities, some of which I've been to and some of which I haven't. But my favourite city after Cork is Paris. And the second one in the book happened to be about Paris, so I just said I had to bring it along tonight. Any of you who learned French in school, I presume you learned the word your book was en livre, but there's also the word en bouquin, which is a more colloquial word, I suppose, for a book. And you'd say bouquiner, to read, you know, or browse through a book. And if you go to the Left Bank in Paris, you'll see these, what they call bouquinistes, stalls of second-hand booksellers, and they sell other things as well. And this poem, I was struck by a line that Gary had about, I can't recall it exactly, the one about your mother, her thoughts, like nettles. Because by coincidence I have something, a little bit, something vaguely resembling that, because the poem is really about memories. So I only decided to bring this evening at about 8:30, and I had to sit down and write an English version, so the English version is not poetry, whatever about the Irish. The bouquiniste. Mi féidir gan teach d'orcha, the bouquiniste, ma vintu sa catti a latin. Mangri cuina chan sa il na franca, di tori shan lau pictures carti. Ma calina reilta is beha farish, wein nu shoda, alien un mula hoosh. Fogri kiol drami o higan opera, fiu dilin feina fos dea o shaskashe. On mangar iad, on mangar amar iad, gathin ad iad. Cymaddi a leag y griad o'r anam yn oed o'r loch y lathef o'n lŷn ti. On awn y lŷn blwyd i mi brysd y ama, grian rhaffan o'n grŷn ac fath y sors, ys iad cyrhon o'ch ffnaf, gydath yr o'r la eig yn fyhesna, mw siant dy fawr a gwrdd y gen. Ni fedr gan pach dorth yn awn tro, smwynt eg bog a harth chosiawn, ydy cati a lathna ffein dy mart yr o'r. Fwy'n o'n gyd smwyt gydag yn yna'r ni o glesna stor a ffeirch i ydy stan o'r. Fwy'n ffein hod o'n mynd ffyrliol o'n ffair o'n iad mor y tal. Ond mae'r chael yn eisiau'n sgant bys y cawn o'i ffeir tent. Ond wyl yr eidol o'n slat y fwynt o'r gyd gwrth meis gyda'i y broch. Bwc yn east. But on the left bank, you can't miss them, the bwc yn east. Second-hand dealers, peddlers of a French past, books, prints, cards, medals, coins, posters of film stars, beauties from the Moulin Rouge, divas from the opera, even Bob Dylan from 1966. Maybe we're all bouquinist. We put remnants of the past in the attic out of sight, fragments of time, the heart's own photos that didn't see light for years, waiting restlessly till we come across them one day by chance. Or maybe we're looking for them. They catch up with us. Images floating by the river of the soul in your own Latin Quarter. Dusty windows of the mind, unwashed for years, staring back at you. What do? You turn away from the thickening dust, or you go for them. Is any one of these broken lumps of time as it used to be? If you touch these, do you pick a scorch to flab your soul and leave its stripes forever? Thank you.
Very well, before that, is Rab in the house, is he?
Yeah. Suddenly my attention was captured by the realization of something which must have been impinging on my subconscious hearing long before the conscious sense was aware of it. From still lower chasm in Earth's bowels were preceding certain sounds measured and definite, and like nothing I had ever heard before. That they were very ancient and distinctly ceremonial, I felt almost intuitively. Much reading of Egyptian legend led me to associate them with the flute, the sambuk, the sistrum, and the timpanum. In their rhythmic piping, groaning, rattling, and beating, I felt an element of terror beyond all the known terrors of the earth. A terror disassociated from personal fear and taking the form of an objective pity for our planet, that it should hold within its depths such horrors as must lie behind these cacophonies. The sounds increased in volume, and I felt that they were approaching. Then I began to hear faintly and from afar the morbid and millennial tramping of the marching things. It was hideous that footfalls so dissimilar should move in such perfect rhythm. The training of unhallowed thousands of years must lie behind that march of the earth's inmost monstrosities, padding, clicking, walking, stalking, rumbling, lumbering, crawling, and all to the abhorrent discords of these mocking instruments. And then, later at night, at the hour when everything sleeps, you will likely hear the morbid and millennial tramping of the marching things. So a small quiz. Who wrote that? It wasn't me. And it wasn't No, it was some American dude from the 19th century. It wasn't Edgar Allan Poe, but the other dude.
Not
Edgar Allan Poe, but the other dude. This guy's got millions of followers all over the world on the internet.
19th century.
Yeah.
Walt Whitman.
Mm.
No.
I can't remember, I'll tell you.
Thank you, Rob.
Always happy to help.
Joe? What's yours?
My poems, I think, are about reconciliation as well, and bicycles. I write like a half a minute poem, so I'll read two. I wrote these two on the bus to Keela on the 20th of December. They're 25 years together, and I love them very much. And I'm going to see them on Saturday again in Dublin. So I love these. I belong to the earth, moon and stars. I deserve to feel all its charms. I live here and learn to be aware that by going there I will reap my share and blossom in its care. To be fully there, now and forever, to be fully together. I am a child, running wild, learning, yearning to set free all that's inside and be alive. To feel the flow and learn to sow what's truly real, a big deal.
It's been a pleasure as always. Richard, you still here?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to read a poem by the Icelandic scholar and publisher Snæbjörn Jónsson. Now, he wrote this poem, it seems, circa 1951, and I found it in the front of a book which he owned. It is written in his own hand, but given that my knowledge of modern Icelandic is exiguous, it is a very good thing that he also, rather miraculously, inserted his own prose translation. Now, I have decided to try to translate the Icelandic metrics into the English equivalent using my exiguous knowledge of Icelandic and his prose translation. So what I'm going to do is I shall read one stanza from the Icelandic, one stanza from his prose version, and then four stanzas from my own version, which I hope perhaps
Go on.
So, his Icelandic poem begins thus. Til tengda dottir mina hazeljonsson. Eik på dessa älsku dottir adel perlo klackalans. Fyrir harnar hangdo sottir hjärtans tackir dammans nats. And he translates. Be this poetic jewel of Iceland yours, my darling daughter. An old man heartily thanks you for having come to see him. And this is my metrical version of the entire poem. To my own daughter. From our world's icy northern quarter, receive this poem beyond compare. An old man's heart gives thanks, dear daughter, that you have come to find him there. That we shall meet again no longer, old experience seems to say. Yet still a father's love grows stronger, so for your health and peace I pray. No one can stave off life's trials. Hardship helps us overcome. Then look back on your path with smiles when your season here is done. Thus, farewell, dear child returning, joyful to your native land. May our God, his power affirming, guard you with his mighty hand.
Thank you very much. And last but not least, we have Eileen. Are you ready? Is this your first time here, Eileen?
Second
time, okay.
Woohoo! Oh, you want to go?
Yeah. This is Sean the Sheep. I am Sean, one of the sheep, who ran away from Little Bo Peep. You think you know the story well? There's more. Please let me tell. She never found me, although she tried. Poor Little Bo thought I'd died. When I met my darling Susie, I knew she was no floozy. She was bright and very cute. I was smitten, to tell the truth. In an instant, I just knew. You understand now, don't you? I am so very glad for all the good times that we had. I would have it no other way. Love always has a price to pay. Susie was shot in the field. I tried to save her, be her shield. I often thought, why not me? This is not the way it's meant to be. By a huntsman, on a Sunday afternoon, on a bright summer's day, 20th of June. We were just lazing around when she collapsed to the ground. I can now tell the tale. I no longer have to wail. Where now is Little Bo Peep? Is she still counting sheep? Is she happy and carefree? Would she recognize me, the sheep who never came home? A sheep that's now alone.